Hey everyone, welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast, where we dive into the people, stories, and iconic moments that have helped make sneakers a global phenomenon. If you've ever told someone that you like their kicks, then you're in the right place. Before we lace up this episode, here's a little teaser for you. Stick around to the end of each episode for the last shot question. It's a chance to test your sneaker knowledge and engage with our community. I've also recently started a newsletter to share my knowledge from nearly two decades of experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link to that below or go to sneakerhistory.com/newsletter for a weekly deep dive into the biggest topics in the sneaker business. All right, now that the business is taken care of, grab your favorite pair of kicks and let's get started with the episode.
Jordan trying to shake off Starks. Oh, what a move! What a play!
LeBron James with no regard for human life!
12 seconds. Bryant for the win. Bang! Iverson against Gill. The crowd on its feet. Allen for the win!
Welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast.
What up, what up? Welcome back to the Sneaker History Podcast. My name is Nick Engvall, and I'm here tonight with my guys, Robbie and Mike. What's going on, fellas?
Not much, man. How y'all doing today?
I mean, I'm doing good. I think Nick's doing good. I'm Robbie. We're all doing good, right?
Yep. What we're all doing good.
Two rhetorical questions. Sorry.
Hey, I mean, it's just good to be back, you know, talk about all the stuff that's been going on. So.
Yeah.
So before we get into the news-related stories, I just wanted to shout out X Miles Coltrane X for leaving us a review on iTunes. We just appreciate that you guys take the time to write us a short review. It definitely helps us reach a new audience and grow our community here with what we're trying to do, and we just are grateful that you guys are doing that. So thank you. If you have a few minutes to do that, go ahead and take the time. We'll definitely appreciate it. We'll shout you out on a future episode. And yeah, anything else about that, guys?
Nope. Thank you. We appreciate you guys, and wouldn't be here without you.
You guys should leave a comment if you have a cat that likes to lay in your open shoe boxes. Mike just figured that out, that cats do that. My cats will find a way to open the box, and then they'll get in it. The box will only be open.
I was just so surprised.
Is that with?
And I hear crinkling paper.
Is that with or without shoes in the box?
I mean,
it was an empty box.
Yeah, his is empty. I'll have the pair of shoes right next to the box, and I just won't put them in the box. It's like 2 days later, so the box is typically still empty.
That's amazing. So I don't know where you guys want to start tonight. There's plenty of news stories, so I'll let you guys.
Go ahead, Robbie. You pick. We got a lot of them out there.
So we're gonna get into TV and movies. My friend made a very good point because he was telling me how much he liked the Coming to America Giannis Greek Freak ones. And I was countering with how much I enjoyed the SpongeBob SquarePants Kyrie's. And he literally said, Giannis makes movies and Kyrie makes TV. I'm like, ah, good point. I like, put it that way.
Zing!
I mean, Game of Thrones is bigger than most movie ever will be, so SpongeBob too. SpongeBob has the longevity of, like, yeah, that's the point. But I'm really feeling just about every pair of these SpongeBob. I'm hoping there's a there's like a fourth Secret Sandy like colorway that we don't see. It's been SpongeBob, Squidward, and Patrick. Mike was saying he liked the Squidward and the Patrick. I like all three. I'm hoping one of them shows up at the employee store at Nike and I get a random text saying if I want them, because I will say yes to any of them. So I'm really excited. if one of you two had to pick, which one are you going with? I guess we'll lump all the Kyrie's together. So you're going with Kyrie's or are you going with movie or TV kind of matchup?
I mean, that's tough because I think the Giannis signature is so well done with the leopard print. And you were telling me about the rose petals in the box. It's just the whole event in the box. Like, they got me with the whole packaging. I haven't seen the Kyrie packaging, but I love all three of the shoes. I just prefer the Patrick and the Squidward. I like the pink and then the teal color a little better than the yellow. But, man, I guess gun in my head, I have to go with the SpongeBob one.
I mean, I'm gonna be the outcast here. I'd go with Coming to America. That packaging and the shoe and just the whole kind of story and concept behind it is super dope to me. And honestly, like the thing about SpongeBob, as much as I'm not like a huge SpongeBob fan, but I think if SpongeBob didn't have so many fake shoes when it was actually like, you know, newer, yeah. I wouldn't have like this just like natural, like, why the hell are we doing this response? But if I was going to pick one of the Kyries, I actually like the SpongeBob colorway quite a bit. I think the swoosh is super dope too, with the, like, you know, distress or whatever.
That's really funny you say that, because in, like, Kyrie's really been about, like, you know, I mean, there haven't been cereal shoes before his cereal shoes, but just like things you would find on kids' shoes at Payless are showing up on Kyrie's shoes. And that's super fun to me, because I was talking to somebody at Nike Basketball a while back, and he was saying, kids don't care about LeBron anymore. Like, kids don't care about KD. Like, they're old. They're old news into the eyes of a 12-year-old. But Kyrie, like, the cereal, you can have the shoes that match the cereal eaten with your favorite character of the TV show you're watching while eating the cereal. So, like, he's really catering to the youth in a way that, like, makes a grown-ass man like me also. So he's hitting pretty much every age group. Like, these, I don't think many adult people are going to want to wear these outside of the court. I think on the court, you could pair, because, you know, they have, like, Stance SpongeBob socks and
stuff. Yeah.
You could have a really crazy, like, if you're in high school, you can have, or even like playing in a rec league and you're 30, you have SpongeBob socks with your SpongeBob shoes, and just have like a fun little, have fun while playing basketball, which is like half the fun of playing basketball sometimes is what shoes you're wearing. You're a sneakerhead. So.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think one thing that I think is really interesting is that LeBron's, Fruity Pebbles stuff never like popped off the way this Kyrie stuff seems to. Like, this Kyrie stuff is just kind of everywhere. And like, I'm definitely a fan of most of the colorways that have come out, the Wheaties, the Lucky Charms, like all those Kyries are super dope to me. I mean, even like cereals that I don't necessarily think are the best, I still end up liking the shoes. I forget the kicks pack was pretty good, or the kicks. Shoes are pretty good.
Lucky Charms. He had everything.
Yeah, but it's interesting that LeBron's, like, the Fruity Pebbles stuff, obviously the first ones were kind of like, you know, the fours or whatever were
the pinnacle.
Yeah, the pinnacle, kind of the alluring, yeah. Like, never gonna have a chance at these. And then when other colorways came out down the road, they just didn't seem to have much, nobody had really interest in it. But the Kyrie stuff is, you know, to me, it seems like everybody's a lot more into it. And I think maybe, too, the packaging helps, because you see the boxes and stuff and you're like, oh, like, it's so creative in the way that they're putting it all together.
Yeah. And plus, you look at the price point as well. It's going to be, what, Kyrie, she had gone over 130. And even if it's that special packaging, they were still, I mean, it was tougher to get, but it was still 130. For that shoe. It wasn't anything crazy. I mean, the resale is different story, but it made more sense for, you know, kids to convince their parents to get a $130 shoe, as opposed to when LeBron comes out with a special, it's $200 come on.
They're accessible. Like, you can go to any store and get them. They could very easily have made that a limited, or these, well, who knows how limited the SpongeBob pack will be, but they could have really rationed off how many go out and played with people's emotions, but now everybody gets to be happy. They get to put the cereal in the shoe. You know, like, put the cereal in the shoe that we talked about.
I don't want to talk about that.
Yeah.
There was a tweet today, complete side tangent, of people eating Travis Scott Reese's Puffs out of Travis Scott shoes, and I wanted to throw up in my mouth.
Yeah, I think it's a little over the top. It's So two things. One, I think it's really cool that Nike's actually doing actually like co-branded stuff with these cereal collabs. You know, Nike SB kind of started this whole theme, you know, almost 20 years ago, right? And I think that it shows just how much like doing things in actual partnerships and collaborations can help kind of just spread the message and get the product out there to a wider audience. And I would say that that's probably why, you know, the Fruity Pebbles LeBron stuff never really popped off the way these more recent Kyries have. In regards to the eating cereal out of a shoe, I think it's just really weird that people, I don't think it's weird. Let me start that over. I think it's completely weird all across the board. The one thing that I find even more weird is when people see somebody do it on the internet and they go do it. It's one thing if you've built your brand around being corny and having crazy things like this on your channels and doing all this, you know, absurd stuff. I don't like fault that at all. I don't necessarily like it and it's not for me, but I understand that, you know, if you think of like comedians and the way that they build their brands, like it's completely over the top material most of the time. And you do these things to get the attention. And then you, as you build your audience, you can do other things that aren't quite as ridiculous. But what's really weird is like the stuff I saw on Twitter today too, was like two guys that like, we've already seen people do this like multiple times with the Travis Scott stuff. This is like not new. I feel like if you're going to do this stuff, why do it like a week or two late to the party, you know?
Party, yeah.
It's like even weirder because then it just looks like you're totally just a biter. And nothing wrong with that. I mean, everybody gets inspired from somebody else. Maybe I'm just not the person to be inspired by somebody eating out of a shoe. but it's just really weird to see people going like, oh, we should do that too, you know?
I guess my question is, and I mean, it'd probably answer itself. Two scenarios. A, you got a couple pairs of these and okay, cool. I'm going to ruin one for the sake of the gram, whatever. You know, option B, your foot was in that at one point and that's gross.
No, I mean,
yeah, I mean, no, it's death. Gross to me completely. No matter what.
But you can also get, like, if you opened up your Reese's, people like not opening up those Travis Scott Reese's to resell them. Within some of them, there was vouchers to get a free pair of the Travis Scott One Lows. So maybe
what?
Yeah, you didn't hear about that? There was
no
some of them. So maybe one dude who was like, "I'm gonna stunt for the gram." Karma hit him in the right way. He's like, he opened it up. And there was a ticket also. But yeah,
20 style.
I forgot exactly how many, but
what?
Yeah.
Yeah, there wasn't that many though. I mean, I saw like a few pictures, but I mean, just the price of those shoes on the secondary market is ridiculous. I mean, they're like $2,000 or something for the lows, which.
Yeah, they're worse than the highs.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely way more.
Weird. I mean, I know they're not released yet, but
yeah, I think they're just like way more limited, and at least for now, obviously, this whole like promo with the ticket inside is an interesting way to promote the shoe without it, like getting it to the fans that are, you know, in theory, you get that to the fans that are really truly fans because they're out there buying cereal based on Travis Scott's, you know, persona. $50. Yeah, but now you can resell cereal too, so. Here we are.
Man, what a world we live in.
So switching up, next topic I wanted to get into, I just thought it was really interesting, is this Concepts Versace reaction, basically the colorways inspired by the dress that Jennifer Lopez wore at the 2000 Grammy Awards. And one, I think it's crazy that Concepts is doing collaborations with Versace. That's like a huge step for a company. I mean, Concepts is a big company behind the scenes, but and you know, it's still really crazy to see what most people perceive as like a sneaker boutique, which doesn't really justify, you know, describing Concepts as that, because they do carry high end brands and I mean, it's a skate. It was a skate shop, and then it was much more than that, and all of that. But it's just really interesting to see that Versace is collaborating with kind of more streetwear focused boutique. I mean, the shoes are out of my price range and not really my style, but at $1,075, but pretty wild to see this.
No, that's a big move in a good way. Just like it shows how big. Obviously, Supreme is the biggest example of it, but just how in recent memory, skate brands, skate shops, nuts and bolts companies, if you want to include Diamond, have gone from underground skateboard, like hood rat stuff, to now like some of the biggest, most profitable players in streetwear. It's nuts in like the best way that that's been able to happen.
Yeah. Those high-end brands, that high-end luxury streetwear is being prominent in the culture right now. So congratulations to both concepts for making such a big move with such a recognizable brand such as Versace, and then Versace being able to be aware and make a move into that by appealing to those who are in the streetwear and sneaker game. So, I mean, it's a win-win situation, looks like. I mean, again, like Nick said, it's too rich for my blood, but they're going to have buyers and going to be even more expensive secondary.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's it's really interesting to – I don't want to, like, come across as too much of a fanboy, but it's really interesting to see this stuff happen after, you know, Ronnie Fieg and Kith have kind of paved the way for these high-end brands to get more – to build closer relationships with kind of more streetwear because, you know, I mean, it kind of goes back to the episode that Robbie was talking to – Aaron, right? About, you know, just the effort that you put into becoming successful in this business. And, you know, I've kind of watched all of this for, you know, the past 15 years or whatever from a very, like, you know, close and you know, kind of business focused mindset with it. And, you know, Kith and, yeah. and Ronnie Fieg, even before Kith, you know, a lot of people probably don't remember this, but Ronnie started Kith and it wasn't successful. And, you know, he continued on with David Z and did this, you know, did the David Z stuff and then started Kith a second time. And it became successful through that, like, you know, just commitment and, you know, kind of like nonstop drive to make it successful. And it started with like collaborations on shoes that at the time, a lot of people probably didn't even care about, you know, like the ASICS Gel Light 3 being one of the early shoes that he worked on and did colorways of for David Z. And I remember people, you know, a lot of people didn't know what that was. And it really changed the landscape of sneakers to kind of have people, to kind of give people an idea of what else is out there besides the like typical, you know, large scale advertising marketing budgeted shoes. Right. And it's crazy to me now that, you know, obviously there's so many things that, and it's not just Kith, it's the perfect storm of everything. But I think that they had a huge part in like bringing in the Polos, the Tommy Hilfigers and the kind of they kind of stepped up consistently into those other luxury brands to, you know, they've have Versace collections multiple times now, I think. And a lot of the streetwear skate brands, et cetera, have benefited from that. And, it's phenomenal to see. I mean, I think that, you know, we all kind of think of Supreme as the top, you know, brand in that space because they can do the crazy, you know, full on collab with Louis Vuitton before Virgil was even in the picture. But now a lot of the kind of walls and doors are kind of flattened for people to, if you can prove you're creative and prove you have the drive to make something cool happen, it's just a matter of meeting the right person that can kind of, you know, hear what you're trying to say, which, you know, I just think that's really awesome.
I agree.
mean, yeah, I can't think of anything better. I mean, like, Diamond was very similar in that sense, but they never failed like that. They just started out really, he just started out really small, and then got bigger. But no, a lot of people don't know about that first failure of Kiss. Cause if you go and even watch like documentaries, they tend to leave that part out. So they was working with David Z in New York, and then A6 happened, and then it popped up, and it grew and it grew and it grew, and then Kiss. So that's important to remember, that you can fail and just use that as an experience to grow more, or fail and go home. So,
yeah. I think that's a great point. And to your point about Diamond, I think that's, it's important too, because I think that they, in the skate world, they 100% changed everything about skate apparel, shoes, like accessories, boards, everything, right? They really kind of, you know, I remember when it, like, being from, you know, Northern California and hanging out in San Francisco, watching all those guys skate, wishing I could do it as a teenager, you know, I remember most of these companies starting and just like being amazed that going from like the dudes you would just kind of see around in, you know, the city, or even in some cases, people that you would see in the videos, go from, you know, completely unknown to running their own, you know, footwear brand, or running their own empire. Or, you know, in the case of Nick and Diamond, it's like that brand was at one point probably the most, I would say it was probably even potentially more popular than Supreme for a short period of time, you know, 7-8 years ago. Sure.
Like 08, 09, when it was like every t-shirt you saw on Earth was a Diamond t-shirt.
Yeah. It was pop culture everywhere. Rappers, like, it was huge in a, like, rap community along with skaters. That was like one of the first brands to unite the two worlds. And that's where everybody looked up. Someone had a Diamond shirt on. It was crazy.
Yeah.
Yep. So next topic I wanted to get into, kind of just reeling it back in from the luxury and all the like grandiose conversation. There was an interesting article on Footwear News about back to school spending. And basically, like, I'm one of those people that grew up with, you know, $30 budget one time a year to get a pair of shoes, until I started working and making my own kind of decisions with my money. And then I obviously wasted way too much money on sneakers. But I think that the interesting thing about this article is that K through 12 families essentially listed, like, I want to say that a pair of clothing and accessories was the top spending category at like basically $240. Second was electronics at around 200, and sneakers or shoes were third with $135 on average. And to think that people are spending $135 on their kids' shoes, I mean, if I had kids, I would obviously be doing the same, probably tenfold, and it's not a good thing. But it's crazy to think that people, the entry point for sneakers at this time seems to be so high. $135 seems like a huge amount of money, you know, for people to spend on shoes for school. What do you guys think about this one?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's just cost of living going up, you know, inflation on everything. But I mean, when I was a kid, I mean, my parents were big on the, I think I mentioned this before in one of the episodes, of the Foot Action, like 2 for $89 or 2 for $80, basically $40 a shoe, just because, I mean, when you're a kid, you're going to beat those shoes to death. You're not in the market at that point as a kid to conserve. You're going to go out there, beat them, and grow out of them. But it also just shows a lot now how much sneakers are. Like, it, right now, three of us, we see $135 for a sneaker. We don't blink, because that's the low end. We start getting real icky after the 160, 170, which means that everything's changed. Like, the whole perspective on sneakers just changed. The idea of quality and that idea of what's not expensive has completely gone a different way. It says a a lot. But on the other hand, because 135 is on the lower end for sneakers, shows that if that's the average, a lot of people are still shopping for, like Nick, you mentioned, sales, and then for you know, they're not buying the LeBron, they're not buying the Jordans. That's not moving the needle, as we've said multiple times. It's going to be something like the Kyrie, something like the PGs, the Donovan Mitchell, things of that nature. We're moving the needle down in that price range that the parents are looking to stay at.
Yeah, it's funny, Nick. You can't lie to any of us and genuinely say you wouldn't spend more than that on a pair of shoes. Or you didn't have like three pairs of the exact same.
Yeah, it would be so problematic. I mean, if you need further proof of that, I already have like a collection of probably 40 or so shoes, like kids' shoes. So, yeah, it's already a problem, and I don't even have
my son's closet. Yeah, hey man, I got one, and I'm like, oh, okay, I bought another one. Crap, and his closet is looking like mine. It's bricks of shoe boxes at this point.
So then, to that point, though, as a sneakerhead father, you're not stressing out on the shoe purchase aspect of the back to school. It could potentially be other things. It's like, you already got the shoes on lock.
Yeah, that's not a problem. But again, he's five, and his size still is in a double, like two figure price range. It's not hit the three figures yet.
Two figures, nice. I don't think a lot of parents are down to spend $135. I know my parents never were. I mean, like, I got a pair of shoes that expensive for Christmas. I tell everybody this. My parents haven't bought me a pair of shoes since I was, like, 16 or 17. Because they were like, oh, you have an addiction. We're not going to. They were looking at it like I was on drugs. Yeah. They're like, oh, we're not going to feed this off. It's been, like, occasional. That's kind of a lie. Like, I think once or twice in college, I got a pair of Jordans for Christmas that I wanted, or the gift card to go buy them. But for the most part, my parents are like, by the time I was a junior in high school, they're like, we noticed you have 40 pairs of, I used to rock Van Eras a lot. I'd have like 20 pairs of all white. So the second one of them gets messed up, I would just take a left out of a pair and replace the left shoe. Like, I have a pair like all white. And then it's a various colors of Eras for days. So they're like, yeah, this is weird. We're not going to buy you anymore. But Eras were like $40-$50 back then, not 130.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like it's definitely, I can't imagine what it's going to feel like when my child at some point maybe comes up and he's like, oh, I want these new LeBron retros. They're $225 because of inflation. And I'm like, ooh, I'm not going to buy those for myself because they're $225. You're tripping. So it's like, how is that conversation going to go? Or when I tell him you're tripping, you're not getting them, and then they come back in my size. He's like, ooh, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, man, you better start to collect the coupons now.
Right. I'll keep it real. It's like, good thing I have a job, right?
Yeah.
Yep. So I guess let's pose that question to everybody that's listening. What would you spend for your kids' sneakers for the school year? I mean, what does that look like now? If you have kids, are you spending $135? Are you above the $135? Or are you still, you know, like my folks, cutting everybody off at $30? There's obviously
multiple kids.
Yeah. That's even crazier. If you have multiple kids and you're spending, you know, $135 each.
You must be rich. You must be rich.
It just gets real expensive real fast. So
what was get him to the Greek? It's like P. Diddy is talking about having to buy Jordan for all his six kids. It's like buying Jordan for that cheap.
Yeah.
I want to get him to the Greek where he played. Yeah. But that's got to be tough. You got a 11, 12, 15, 17, and 18-year-old in the house.
Oh. You know, I need a shoe sponsor for the kids here. Someone sponsors for a future shoe buy.
Right.
Yeah. So somebody who doesn't have a problem with spending money on sneakers, Kanye West is back in the news. This article is about a week old now, but I just think it's worth talking about because it really kind of shows the success that he's been able to find despite kind of the way he's portrayed, and maybe even the way he plays it up, because this article, I can't remember the exact dollar amount, but basically the Yeezy brand is worth over $1 billion, and Kanye essentially owns all of it. I'm sure that, you know, there's cost involved to partner with Adidas and all of that stuff, but the value of the brand is, you know, I forget what the comparison, do you remember what the comparison was, Robbie, with like talking about Michael Jordan?
In terms of like how the ages between the two are?
Yeah, it was something about how quickly.
There's twofold. There is how much faster Kanye has gotten to that amount of money than MJ. And when you think about it, without playing a sport, we normally associate high amounts of money with sports. Like, oh, you make NFL money. So Kanye is doing that without sport money. But double caveat, MJ's NBA money was a lot different than NBA money now. So that's a big difference. But there was that point, and there was also like Kanye's already half of what Jordan brand is worth. And that's Jordan brand, not Jordan retros, but Jordan brand already at like 3 million to 1.5 million annually. I'm trying to rush and spell talk until I can find the ages.
Oh yeah. So it's basically I think it was something along the lines of the shoe line at 1.5 billion in 2019, the Jordan line does 3 billion. And, you know, obviously Jordan brand's been around for 34 years, where the Yeezy brand's been around, what,
six?
Yeah.
2013 is when he signed. So I guess, yeah, Yeezy line would be the next year. So never mind. Still trying to talk and kill time. We're trying to find. This article is really thorough, Forbes. I want to commend you for that, for how much in-depth coverage you have on it. Yeah, we'll revisit the ages. If you know, leave us a comment with how old MJ was compared to Kanye. Please, because this article is super long and I can't find it.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting that how quickly Kanye's been able to kind of grow this brand, and obviously that comes, you know, through his partnership previously with Nike, him working with Louis Vuitton, his success as a musical artist, you know, like, I think there's a lot of things that factor into it, but it, you know, taking away like all the politics of Kanye and all the things that, you know, people kind of think he's crazy for, I think that kind of getting to this point for him has to feel really good to show like how much, you know, success he's, you know, monetary success he's been able to find in this business, because it's not something that's easy for somebody to do, to come in and create their own thing. And, you know, I know that most people hear Kanye and they think, oh, well, he had the help of a Nike or Adidas or whomever. And yeah, that's true, but no brand goes and starts from absolutely zero in terms of designing footwear. Everybody uses either, you know, a designer that came from a previous brand, or a manufacturer that they know that manufactures for another brand. I mean, this is kind of how you build a business, and it's just cool to see that, you know, he's kind of been able to kind of flip the script on what we traditionally have thought of. Where, understand. Oops, hang on. It's kind of crazy. It's kind of crazy to hear him, you know, flip the script on what we know is like, you know, athletes being the only, you know, way to sell sneakers or sportswear. And not to like brag about it, but like, I wrote an article for Complex back when I was still contributing there, probably like 2015, that I basically took the counterpoint, because Matt Welty, who writes there, had written a piece basically saying that athletes will always rule the footwear business kind of, and I took the other side of that and kind of just said that Kanye's the reason that this, he's the model that people can emulate if they want to become a successful fashion footwear designer, brand, whatever. Because he's not just him, right? The thing about Kanye is that he has the support of a lot of very influential people and a lot of people that are pushing themselves and doing crazy things and have a massive audience. So for him to be able to do that, I think this is something that even athletes could learn from, because looking at, let's say, Giannis, you know, with this Coming to America shoe, or his, you know, just his new shoe in general, he's at the point where he's potentially the best basketball player in the world. Are, you know, like, that could be debated, right? But MVP of the NBA is a big deal. He's out at Drew League, living it up, having a good time, and playing, you know, like, and you know, super excited about being there. And I think that genuineness can be translated into a lot of opportunities for him. The one thing that I think that athletes like him need to kind of start now is this overall network of supporters that they have, whether they're celebrities or, you know, celebrities as athletes or entertainers or whomever, because this is something that Kanye has proven is very successful. If you look at, you know, just his close circle of, you know, Don C and Virgil and Ivy and Jasper and those guys that were around before the Kardashian stuff even happened, those guys have grown into, you know, their own kind of creative powerhouses, in my opinion. And then on top of that, you obviously have the Kardashian Jenner family that's, you know, they're all doing their own things, but they're all very supportive, whether it's just a simple post on social or talking about it in their, you know, interviews and their regular kind of cadence of doing business for themselves. They all support each other, and it's a really cool thing to see. You know, take away all of the, you know, the hate that goes towards them. That to me is like very impressive. And I think NBA players, specifically like high school and college players that are headed towards the NBA, should keep that in mind and have that in the back of their mind, to like who their real allies are as they move forward, because it like kind of creates the army that's going to push your product. And you only see that occasionally in the NBA now, where I think of like KD with the creamsicles, right? The whole team pretty much wore those shoes to launch the shoe. And, you know, it's happened with LeBron on a few occasions, but it's very limited for people to actually do that and get the whole support of the surrounding squad around them. So that's the end of my rant. Going to step off the soapbox and let you guys talk
about it. No, but on that same note, the 08, 09, and 10 Lakers all rocked Kobe routinely. The whole squad, especially if you're like exclusively on Hyperdunk like Powell was. But every like 5, 6, 7 players on the Lakers all rocked the Kobe 4, 5, and 6 with Kobe.
They did, yeah. And even more impressive was the Christmas when the Grinch Sixers came out, the whole team rocked the Kobe Sixers.
Yeah, well, how and could you?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of split if you didn't. Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing you guys mentioned, Mo, was like pretty much every good point there is about this whole story. But kind of diving a little deeper about the new athletes and younger athletes now, they need to find a way to take ownership of the things that they're doing, because a lot of times they're, you know, getting the sponsorship check, you know, they have their signatures, but you get to a point, you know, you look at some athletes now, you get to a point when they retire, they're not, you know, they bring the records back, but it's not even connected with them as an athlete anymore. They're just Nike bringing back and changing their name, or whoever may be coming back and changing their name. So I think the lesson here is to take ownership. Kanye, we mentioned, owns all of Yeezy. Of course, he's paying some, you know, some money to Adidas, you know, to help produce these bad boys. But when it's all said and done, he's the owner of it. And that's the big lesson, like to own your logos, own your silhouettes, to make sure they can always be profitable for you, no matter what stage your career in.
Yeah. Shout out to Russell Wilson for buying Sierra all of her originals. vinyl.
Boom, there you go.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, I think that's a super important thing. And just to like go a little bit further on that, I know people in the sneaker, you know, even the YouTube sneaker space that have battled each other over who owns the rights to the content. And what I would say is it's not something you can do right out the gate. And Kanye is a great example of that, right? Like doing stuff for Bape, doing stuff for, you know, Louis Vuitton. I mean, he worked with all sorts of different brands in that like 2005 to 2008 era before like he really got, you know, to the level that all of us kind of dream about and like having their own shoe with a major brand. So I would suggest even, you know, keeping in mind that opportunity to work with people that can further your career is worth taking the time, even if it's not exactly what you want in a lot of scenarios, because that can open doors and you know, introduce you to other people that can teach you things and open other doors for you. And, you know, I'm 100% with you on the idea of like owning what you do at this point, because that's the beauty of, you know, kind of the internet at this point is for the most part, if you have even just a phone, an iPhone, you can, you know, create whatever kind of content you want. Now, obviously there's plenty of restrictions on that and, you know, you can't do the crazy stuff and you have to have access to the things or the people that you want. But if you learn how to tell stories, that is immensely valuable in your like overall goals with what you want to do. And with the sneaker world, I think it's super, you know, kind of full circle on this episode, going back to like the conversations about the Kyrie, you know, cereal and the SpongeBob stuff. You could even argue that the stuff that people were doing 10 or 12 years ago with fake Jordans and SpongeBobs is now, you know, I mean, it's now legitimized, right? Because it's something that people are passionate about. They share that common interest. And if people just continually work towards it, I'm sure there are people that were making those fake shoes back in the day that are working at brands or have their own companies that are not necessarily the crazy knockoffs that they were 10, 15 years ago.
No doubt.
Yeah.
So another question for you guys and the audience, what do you think of this whole Kanye thing? And do you think that, and I'm not talking about dollar amount, right? Because you can argue that the dollar is a lot different when Jordan started versus what it is now. But do you think that, you know, 50 years from now, assuming we still have a planet, that Kanye is a bigger star in the nostalgia piece and Yeezys are the things that people want retroed? Or will like Jordan still be kind of that nostalgic piece, or will they both coexist?
I'm going with coexist because you just have two different sets of people. Because you have people who, even though don't know who Michael Jordan truly is and never actually watched him play, you have people who just love basketball and love the history of it and will, you know, love the history of the shoe. So I think that's always going to be there because those people will pass that down to, you know, their possible kids, that same, you know, that maybe that same love and that knowledge. But they're also going to have people on the other side of, hey, I remember Kanye. Kanye spoke to me. Kanye's shoes, you know, I remember buying them here because, you know, they just love Kanye so much. So I think it's going to be, they're going to coexist. I mean, we're already starting to get re-releases of Kanye's shoes. I think once we start getting some changes to the design, you know, maybe a few years from now we'll start getting retros, and who knows, maybe someday in the late far future we'll get retros of the Nike product as well. So I think they're gonna go with it.
What if Nike retros the Yeezys but ends up calling them the Air West or like something that's like stupid? I don't know,
that'd be crazy. Like
it would,
I mean, it wouldn't put it past them, but it'd be nuts.
I really, really, and I've hoped this since Virgil got the Louis Vuitton job. Like, there can't be any real ill will between Louis and Kanye. Those shoes are easily my favorite Kanye shoes ever made, period, end of story.
The Jaspers?
The Jaspers are fantastic. It's like, it's what every high fashion shoe that makes a sneaker tries to be, I think. Like, he mastered it so early. That would be one re-release. I would spend a couple grand. Like, I would spend Louis money on a pair of those. Like,
dang.
That pink, the pink pair of flawless. Like, every, think of every, like, Balenciaga runner or this, like, Gucci, like, everything is this trying to be outlandish. And it's the Kanye Louis Vuitton was so unassuming for being assuming. You know, it's just like a loop. Like, yeah, it's Louis Vuitton. And what? It's just like, it was so perfectly stated. Like, that's one Kanye retro I would love, love, love to see one day.
Yeah, it's definitely one of my favorites. And I think you know, you describe it perfectly, right? It's the sneaker that every, like, you know, kind of high-end dress shoe manufacturer wants to or tries to make, right? He just did it perfectly, in my opinion. But I kind of think that we're going to see less retros at some point in the next probably 5 to 10 years. And I don't think that that's because people aren't into the nostalgia aspect of it. I just think that we're getting to a point where, like, there's too many out there. You know, space becomes an issue. Money obviously becomes an issue for people. And I think that the idea of the idea that we could potentially buy, like, a new release every week at the pace that shoes are released doesn't seem to be sustainable to me from a business perspective for any of the manufacturers or any of the brands, right? Even somebody like Kanye and Adidas and the Yeezy stuff, those shoes are steadily declining in sales numbers, although, like, he's putting out new colors so people have new options and people are buying more in total, but they're buying less of each release, in my opinion. And I think that's a really interesting thing, and it'll be interesting to watch that as kind of the progression of the sneaker business moves forward over the next, like, probably 5-10 years. But so I want to just reiterate that question to the audience. What do you think it's going to look like in, say, 50 years? Will we be getting Yeezy retros? Will Kanye be, you know, more highly regarded than Jordan? The Yeezy jumps over the Jumpman thing, or is it still going to be, you know, a mix of both? But that's pretty much it for this episode. Kind of running out of time here. So do you guys have any shoes that you're looking at this week that are on your radar, exciting you or anything?
Nothing new. I think I'm going to shut it down for a while, personally. I went for a couple of things to come out, but I got my first pair of LeBron 3s thanks to my wife this past weekend. It's kind of a late birthday present she surprised me with, and I see why Robbie loved them.
Nice.
They're gorgeous.
Yeah, did you get the Oilers colorway?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my favorite.
Stumbled upon a pair. They love them. Tried to find Robbie a pair, but they only had a size 11. That kind of sucks.
Yeah.
How much did
you, Robbie? Me a favor finding them. I bought a pair of Epic React 2s while we've been talking. Like, they were $45 on Finish Line. So if you're listening to this and they're still there, with shipping, it's $52. Well, Oregon doesn't have tax, so I don't have tax. But yeah, $45. Still. Retail's $150. That's a good deal.
Yeah, it's definitely a super dope shoe for that price. I've been meaning to dig through some of the sales stuff on Finish Line today. So
get to they that. They had 270 boat fins for $45 also. And that's like a $180 shoe, but they sold out by the time I saw them. Man.
Well, Also due to Nike outlets, because I got a pair of React 87s, which I never thought I'd buy because I didn't feel like they're worth 160, but I got them priced at $96 at the outlet.
That's good. That's a nice pickup.
Yes.
So there's tons of stuff that I'm looking at that I'm just going to, we'll talk about in another episode, but I recently picked up, I'm just going to save this for this conversation for later, but the shoe that caught my eye on the websites this week was that Puma, what is it called? The Puma LQD cell. It's got like the translucent overlays, super bright shoe. It's like yellow, orange, teal, blue. I mean, it's just wild looking. So that's definitely the shoe that I'm kind of looking at this week as potential new pickup.
That's clean.
I just love all those crazy colors, but
dang, only 110. Also.
Yeah. So, send us a tweet, leave us a comment on Instagram, and let us know what shoes you're after this week, and let us know what you think about this episode. If you get a chance, leave us a review on iTunes. Just give us some feedback, have a conversation with us, and let's talk some sneakers. Let's wrap up, and why don't you guys let them know how they can find you?
Yeah, you guys can find me, Gil Lurie over at Sneaker History. Find me on Twitter, Instagram, under MadWatcher789. Robbie, where can they find you, sir?
You can find me on Xbox Live, fine-tuning my Call of Duty Black Ops 4 skills so I can take on Mitch. that's a really specific joke. But you can find me on the internet like you always can, or you can add me on Xbox at admin of the class with 2 P's.
All right. Well, you can find me at Nick Engvall on all platforms. And more importantly, just follow us at Sneaker History. And thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Peace.
Bye.
See ya.
What up, y'all? This is Nick again. Before you take off, I want to ask a few favors of you. First off, if you're still listening, I wanted to thank you for supporting us and continuing to listen to our podcast. If you're enjoying it, and I'm going to assume that you do if you're listening this long, please take a couple of minutes, head over to iTunes, drop us a review, leave a comment, make sure you're subscribed. It's the only way that we can really continue to grow our audience and reach new people and continue to grow the podcast. Second thing is, if you haven't already, head over to sneakerhistory.com/shop. You can pick up t-shirts, coffee mugs, stickers, and some other miscellaneous things. And all of these things go to help us continue this podcast and continue the site and just pay for miscellaneous expenses that come up. We're not trying to make a killing off of it, but it would be awesome to have your support. And who knows, maybe run into one of you on the streets one day rocking a Sneaker History t-shirt. Thanks again, and we'll catch you next time. Peace.
Hey, Nick here again. Before you take off, I want to thank you for listening to the Sneaker History podcast. Be sure to hop into our Discord to answer this episode's The Last Shot question and get to know our community of sneaker enthusiasts. If you'd like more insights on the trending topics in the sneaker world, I've also recently started a newsletter to share my knowledge from nearly 2 decades of experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link to that below or go to sneakerhistory.com/newsletter. And last but not least, tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a simple compliment can take you, and we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Thank you for all the support, and we will catch you on the next episode. Peace.